And now back to Wake Up and Smile, celebrating 20 years in Phoenix.
It's the 20th anniversary of Wake Up and Smile.
20 wonderful years.
It has definitely been a fun ride. Now, I understand you've got some cooking tips for us, Diane.
It looks like we're having some problems with the prompter here.
The teleprompter on which everything we say appears on is broken.
Okay.
We're having what is known in the business as technical times right now.
Ad lib.
What, huh?
Make something up.
What, huh?
I drive a red car.
TBTL.
Their program is loose, but it is prepared ahead to be casual, with heavy references to sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the Charleston Town Center Mall, and I think I'm the first one in this bathroom this morning. It's perfectly clean. So, power up.
Just because you like laying around your house in your underpants doesn't mean the United States of America has to see it.
You're living in a nightmare that starts at the crack of dawn.
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City.
Okay, let's do it.
What a beautiful yet grotesque from a weather standpoint morning here in Bellingham. It's cloudy, it's raining, and yet I couldn't be happier to be here at the Broadcast Center after a very, very busy, fun, rewarding, humbling, trying to think of other adjectives. It was a wild week that we had celebrating the TBTL 3000th episode, and now here we are back at it again with the White Vans at episode 3005 in a collector series, and we have plenty to talk about.
Let the fun begin.
Including a new way to consume scotch that has people on the internet freaking out, as they are wont to do. The Glenlivet Company has introduced what look apparently to be like Tide Pods, but they have scotch in them.
It tastes like soot and hot water. I'm hooked.
We will look into that. Also, speaking of the internet, somebody tweeted out a little Life Hack It Buddy for hotel travel.
Life Hack It Buddy!
A guy took a picture of, you know how the hangers that you have in the closet in the hotel often have those little clips on them. I guess those are for holding, like clipping your pants on there or something. Or maybe the corners of your shirt. I'm not sure, actually. This guy used those clips to clip together the curtains in the hotel room, where the curtains didn't really all the way come together, thus keeping morning light out. People thought that was just a brilliant life hack it buddy, and then they started tweeting all of their hotel room hacks. And I have to say, some of them, they were compiled by the Washington Post. Some of them are really good. So we'll share those with you. And also, Andrew and I are now part of a piece of art that I never thought would happen.
Oh, Ma, Pa, it's just beautiful.
So we'll tell you about that as well. Plus, emails, V-mails, and the aforementioned longest-running co-brosif of the show-sif. He is TBTL's number one brand evangelist.
Yeah!
He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood, Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Ironically, I should be TBTL's number one brand evangelist. You and I should be number one and number two, but you and I are near the literal bottom of the list as far as people who evangelize for this show.
Yeah. Two guys who start at the bottom of evangelizing and stay at the bottom. I actually thought about that. I've been reflecting, of course, this weekend on all the fun we had last week traveling all over New York, Orlando, Seattle, even. And I was remembering that when we were in New York, I started the show by saying that we were in the alternative comedy district. because we were kind of where all these podcasts are happening. And, you know, like places like Union Hall and the Bell House and where we were, Littlefield. These are all venues that host a certain level of comedian who's hosting a certain level of podcast. And I think I said something like there's 33 podcasts being recorded near us and we're number 33, but we're like shooting for 32. And I thought later, that's not true. We're definitely in the 20s. That was, I was being unnecessarily critical of our program. I would put our show up against a lot of other shows. That's really, I kind of, there's a certain manic nature to my relationship with our show, Andrew. There are days when I feel like, you know, I'm not the number one brand evangelist. And then there's other days where I'm like I just saw there was a, I think New York Magazine, maybe it was Vulture, put out a list of the like top 10 comedy podcasts that are like essential, like that kind of are, they were sort of crediting them for being responsible for the podcast boom. And of course I read the list and of course we weren't on it. Like, why would we be? But I was also angry and felt like an injustice had occurred.
Yeah, you know, I was going to mention at the top of the show, I'm very excited about today's show. I feel like, I know that I spent a lot of time last week, not belly aching, as my family would say, but maybe, you know, just kind of really talking incessantly about the fact that, you know, our schedules were really packed last week with all the travel and the live shows, and that it was a challenge for us, or certainly for me, and it was a challenge, and I'm glad that we stepped up to the challenge, and I'm glad we did that. I will say, like, Friday's podcast, the show that you and I recorded here before we boarded the boat and got set up to do our final live show, you and I both admitted off air, like, you and I were running on gas. We were running on fumes, I should say. It's good when you're running on gas. We were running on gas. Mm-hmm. Fumes on Friday and afterwards.
I am running on gas today because I made this vegetarian gumbo last night that was delicious, but very garlicky. Anyway,
ooh,
continue.
You're against the gars. Anyway, what I was going to say was, like, I'm looking at today's show sheet. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm really excited to talk about both of these topics. I feel refreshed. I feel energized. I think the experience of getting to meet a bunch of listeners, you and I dial up every day, as our listeners know, and we plug our computers together, which is how it works, and we talk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's gold in them, there are hills, and sometimes there isn't. But I think there's a kind of a steady nature to what we do, a reliability that people like. But part of me can sometimes
keep going.
I was just gonna say, but part of me can sometimes be like, oh man, what are you doing, Walsh? You woke up an hour before showtime again. You sound tired on the show. You sound like you're phoning it in. Sometimes I can, you know, sometimes I can beat myself up a little bit. And I'm kind of excited. I feel like today is the, now that all of the 3,000th activities are behind us, I feel very energized. I feel like it's kind of, I don't know that this will end up panning out in any way that the audience would notice, but I personally feel like this is a new day of TBTL, and I'm really looking forward to, like, kind of just moving on to the next 4,000 or the next 1,000, which will get us to 4. But what were you going to say? You were trying to jump in there.
Well, first of all, we should consider renaming the show New Day TBTL, although I don't know how Margaret Larson's going to feel about that. Noted TBTL P1, Margaret Larson. But I was going to say that what a consistent thing that I heard from the listeners, both in Orlando, New York, and in Seattle on the boat, was people saying, you know, thank you for doing the show, which is extremely kind of them to say. And I overuse this word, but it's true. It's sort of humbling when people share their personal experience of maybe hard times they've been through or times when the show really meant a lot to them. And people really, what they stress, though, is just like they love the fact that they can rely on the show happening every day. What nobody said was the show is good.
Yeah, right.
What nobody said was this content is stellar. What people really focused on was this content is happening 5 times a week, which I don't take any offense to that. First of all, I feel exactly the way that you're describing. I was excited to do the show today. I remain excited to do it. It's just kind of nice to not have in the back of our mind, is the show recording? Can people in the back of the boat hear us?
By the way, can you guys hear us? I'm doing it on a boat today. You don't know that you're up
so many. Oh, that's what the seagull sound effect
yes.
is. But yet you're using a sound effect. That makes no sense.
Well, it's just thematic mostly.
But like when we're doing the show in some different location, there's all of the just kind of like angst around. At some point I started calling it angst, and I don't know if that was an improvement in my like sort of vocab or not, but you know, all the kind of angst. And then another time I started calling it angst, Andrew. That's the crazy part of this story. But like there's all the angst around like, is the show getting recorded? Are the levels okay? Is the crowd enjoying it? And it's really nice to just be sitting here in this room staring out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain, chatting with you about things that I do think are kind of interesting and not having any of that other noise anywhere in our head. So that's cool. But yeah, it was really great to get to check in with so many people the last week, and what kept coming up was people would say in a slightly menacing way, "Don't you dare stop doing the show." Which I was like, "Have you heard something? Because I'm planning on doing this show for a while. Have you been talking to Michael Dwayne Ressler? What is Mike's surprising middle name?
Is it Dwayne? It might be Dwayne.
He approved a concur. Yep, and we're back.
Welcome to Old Day TBTL.
Yes, it's an old day. I'm trying to actually find this. Yeah, expense report status change. Dwayne, D-U.
Oh, that's
W-A-Y-N-E. Dwayne.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm very excited to be back and doing this. And unless people have heard something about us being canceled, unless people have been talking to Michael Dwayne about things we don't know about, I think we're going to be here for a long time.
What if I, by the way, just, everything's fine. Go ahead. What's that?
Let me ask this. Are they circling your garbage that's still rotting on the sidewalk in front of your house, Andrew?
Yeah, they are.
To tee you up?
As a matter of fact, I'm just shooing them away here. Should we talk about that for a second? What time is it? We're 12 minutes into the show. Can I do this in 5? Yes, I can. So, my garbage was not picked up again.
Wait, what?
TBTL breaking news.
All right, update in a story that we've been following for 2,000 episodes. This sounds like I'm being sarcastic, Andrew, like I'm trying to subtly neg this as a topic. I'm fascinated at how you are being trolled by the garbage collection people in Seattle, because this is the second week in a row they didn't pick it up.
Third.
Even worse.
Third. I'm fine. Third.
3:30.
2:30, 3:30. So I don't think I have to give any background on this. I will say, though, one of my favorite things of doing the live shows, especially in Orlando, was how everybody after the show wanted to talk to me about garbage. They wanted to talk about my garbage problems. They wanted to talk about their garbage problems. We tried to take garbage problems and find garbage solutions. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So I will... I'm sure there are some people who hate garbage talk, but I have learned that there are dozens of you who enjoy garbage talk. So,
dozens!
Quick reset here. I've been having trouble with the garbage collectors picking up not all of our garbage, but just the black garbage bin, the traditional-looking garbage can issued by the city. So, you know, it's a standard black garbage bag can. I say that only because if the truck is having trouble spotting it, that's not on me. Genevieve has said maybe we need to wrap it in orange reflective tape or something. I say let the city do that. Let the city solve the city's problems. But yes. When you call to complain that your garbage has not been picked up, the city always says, well, you got to put it out there, you know, on time, and you got to have it on the curb. And now I'm not calling the city directly.
Operator error. They assume it's you.
And so I don't call the city directly anymore. I did that a couple of times when I first moved in. Luckily, I call the my landlord, a woman named Shelley, who has been mentioned on the show before. And Shelley's the best. I always feel a little bit bad bugging her about this stuff, but she doesn't make me feel bad. She's sharing my frustration with this. I'm sorry that she's the one who has to be on the phone with the city, but they're always pushing back on her, saying, well, they got to be out there on time, blah, blah, blah. So I started taking photos of my garbage on Sunday nights and sending them to Shelley. Now, somewhere in the deep metadata, those are probably timestamped in a way that you can't change it, and that's good. That proves my point. But I don't think the city is really putting their best people on the mystery, and I doubt they're going into the metadata to make sure that I'm not sending them old photos of garbage cans, which maybe I would do if I was a lesser person.
Garbage collectors are so meta.
That's right.
I believe it's the...
So somebody suggested, one of our listeners suggested that I start taking a photo every week on Sunday night as I put them to the curb. Of course, garbage day is Monday morning starting at 7 a.m. And they said, take a photo and tweet it. That way you have...
Genius
the,
idea.
Yes, you it's time stamped. It's public. It's out
it's
there.
It's like in the old movies how the big thing was take a picture with the... With the kidnap,
yeah.
You know, the person you've kidnapped, and make them take a picture with that day's paper.
I actually like thought about doing that as kind of like funny, like holding. But I mean, that doesn't really prove anything because I could, if it was out there late, I could just still grab the day before's newspaper. But anyway, so here's what I tweeted out, thinking that, you know what, if I take this photo and I tweet it and I do all of my due diligence here, I know this will be the week that they pick it up, which is good. Like in a certain way, like. I guess you just somehow I metaphysically got the job done. Andrew Walsh, metaphysically getting the job done since 1995. Mm-hmm. So I took a photo of the cans on the curb. I tweeted directly to the Seattle SPU. That's the Seattle Public Utilities. I didn't like try to make it public. I didn't put the period before it so that everybody would automatically see this on my timeline. I'm trying to keep it somewhat between me and SPU. But I added them. I said, here is photo evidence of our garbage at the curb 14 hours before pickup tomorrow. Please empty them this week. Parenthetically, and don't blame me if you miss it again. End parentheses. Ooh. And tweet 4:54 p.m. October 6, 2019. Shots fired. Thank you for the sound effect.
Indeed.
Also, birds flying around. Luke. Wait, didn't one time Morty leave you a...
Yes. He did have seagulls in the background.
He left you a message one time with the seagulls in the background. So anyway, I started when it looked like the garbage would not be picked up. They did pick up my recycling. They did pick up my yard waste, which means I just have the little black can out there again now. And as the day turned into evening yesterday, and you know, once it hits 6 o'clock, you know they're not coming. I was like, all right, they really didn't pick it up. Now I've got to send an email to my landlord, the woman who handles this, Shelley, and I have to include the tweet that I thought was so genius. But then I started thinking, ugh, I put all that – there was some snark in that tweet. And like maybe that doesn't help her. Like when she calls the city and has to be like, well, here he sent out a tweet and it's negging you a little bit about it. Maybe she doesn't want to do that. So I sent her a note. I said, here's the tweet I tweeted out. Here's a screen cap of it. Like we have – irrefutable evidence now that this was time stamped at a certain time, unless I'm completely psycho and taking them out to the curb, taking a photo and then returning them back away from the curb, which would I watched Joker this weekend. I'm kind of getting close to that. She did write back after several hours last night. She wrote back saying, okay, I'll try to take care of this. She said something really funny. It's always nice to hear from you and Genevieve, but I'm sorry it always has to be about this. Which was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit worried that I was putting her in a tight position with my snarky tweet. But if so, she didn't seem to, I don't know, she didn't mention it.
What's the activity been on the tweet?
No activity. Nobody has seen it. Nobody, I mean, again, because I tried not to, like, you know, you put a period in front of things.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if the very, very first word of your tweet is the at symbol and you're adding at somebody... Only people who will see that in their feed is the people you added or people who follow both you and the person you added.
Well, that's fascinating. I see. So that was very discreet of you. And I think, by the way, this is a stand your snark state.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you absolutely are in the right to be a little bit snarky considering you're going into week three of them not picking this up. And if that hurts their feelings – and that's sort of on them because the service has been really bad. I have a feeling that you're dealing with a rogue operator. And I know this, or at least I sense this because I was a rogue paper route operator. I used to deliver the North Central Outlook. Well, I put deliver in quotes there because at some point I realized no one really knew if what day the Outlook was supposed to come. They didn't really pay for it. Now, the analogy is starting to kind of break down here because people do pay for their garbage and people are aware if it gets picked up or not. But I learned at some point that some weeks if I didn't feel like literally delivering the paper, I could toss all of the papers into the recycling. That was when there was those newsprint recycling like little sheds everywhere. And because what I realized was no one person realized – that they were part of a larger thing. So each person just individually thought, ah, crap, the paper must have gone into the bushes or I got missed this week. But because they weren't communicating, they didn't realize that I was just not doing it. And I have a feeling that there is whoever operates whatever truck is supposed to pick up that garbage. It's not that they're driving past your house and not seeing it. I think they're not picking up your block or they're – I think that because they – when they're done with their route, they're done with their route. My sense is that they're just – they're basically doing a crummy job and by not going down your street because they just want to get done with their route faster.
I think that's actually a little bit more complicated than what's going on. My theory is that we are the only residential garbage pickup for blocks. If you go, you know,
right.
two blocks to our left, you got businesses to the left of us, mm-hmm. other businesses to the right of us, stuck in residential pickup hell. I just lost it. With you,
but I like that you tried.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
But
it's like the second reference to that song in like three shows.
This raises an issue that I don't want to get into because I'm going to get defensive about it. But I think what's happening is because this we've been here for over a year and a half now, maybe 2 years now, and the garbage pickup has been a little bit spotty. It was when we first moved in. I think, again, they were out of the habit of stopping here, and maybe there was like a period of a month or two when nobody was living here, so they just kind of – it got out of their muscle memory to stop here. But I think that it's three different trucks who come barreling down a pretty fast road. We're the only yep. residential pickup for several blocks. It's a one-way. There's a bike lane. And I think that on most pickup days, the recycling is picked up and the yard waste is picked up because there are these big green and blue bins that can catch the eye of the pickup people. Now, if there's a chance that the garbage truck is coming up third and I've already brought the other two bins back into my, you know, little garbage vestibule, and they're not seeing these big colored things, I think the final truck, the garbage truck, is just barreling down and not seeing the small little black container. But it's not on me to leave the other ones out there as targets for people's dog poop.
And it also, is it the system that they're just supposed to drive and if they see a can, they stop? I mean, there should be. We live in 2019, allegedly. Like, there should be an app that they're working off of. There should be, like, I feel like it should be more high tech at this point mm-hmm. because this is a big deal to people. And, like, I can't believe the system is just remember to go drive by Andrew's house because he's got a can out there. That's not a good system. It's like, and I think that honestly, I think that they have a list. They have at least some kind of list because what if a new person is doing the route? There is. I mean, this
which
is
what I think is happening
thing.
Now, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but why is it suddenly happening? My best guess is maybe because it's contractors, right? It's not actually city employees who are doing this. And I just bet you somebody new is on the route.
Well, they contract with a big company that, you know, yeah, I would not imagine that the garbage collection people work for the city of Seattle. They work for a company that contracts with the city of Seattle. And probably it's a new driver, but I also think it's possible. So one, they left it off the list, so the driver doesn't know it's even there. But I also think I honestly think it's possible that it's just a pain in the ass to go get your one garbage can, and on certain days they just don't want to deal with it, and they kind of know that the most of the time they can get away with it because the default setting from the city is you, the resident, messed up. And so I honestly think that there's a chance that they're just kind of like. They just don't care because they're like, it's going to be 8 minutes to go down this road where there are no other garbage cans and then stop and do this whole thing. Or we could just skip it and get back to home base earlier. Again, as a sketchy person, as a noted local sketchy person, I can't rule that out.
Yeah, I mean, my question, though, is then when they have to come back, usually, so garbage pickup is supposed to be Monday between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. It doesn't happen. You can't report. Even if you have a strong suspicion that they're not going to be picking it up that day, you can't report it until six, until after six, obviously. So by the time I report it to our landlord, who then calls the next day, which will be today, Tuesday, by the time she gets a response, they'll say, okay, they'll send somebody out in the next 24 hours to pick it up. Last time that happened, they picked it up at the very, like, last minute on Wednesday at like 6 o'clock on Wednesday. So it'll be sitting out there for a couple of days. But you would wonder if the people who are making the decision, like if somebody is making just a game time lazy decision not to stop because it's a pain in their ass, then is it falling on somebody else to do the special route 2 days later to come back down Roosevelt and pick it up? Because if it's the same person who's responsible for cleaning this up, after 3 days or after 3 weeks of doing this, you'd think it'd be more of a pain in the ass to have to go on a special route 2 days later.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying 100% that's what's happening. I'm just saying I could see a world in which it's getting skipped because maybe, you know, somebody else has to deal with it 2 days from now because that truck will have moved on to a different part of the city in a different route and they just don't want to deal with it. Again, your street could be uniquely a pain in the butt because it is, like you said, a one way and there's a bike lane and cars are backing up behind you and honking at you. And maybe it's just like they just have a bad feeling around dealing with it. But something is definitely up. And I think you need to continue on with this tweet campaign.
Not
that it necessarily worked today, but I think you need to go outward facing with it. I think you need to take that at off of there, and you need to just, or whatever you need, a period. And you need to just like put them on blast and see if we can get the TBTL, because that will, the city of Seattle will notice if there's a tweet about a garbage can that has 100 likes, that will get on their radar.
That's interesting. I didn't want to make it a public campaign. I just wanted it as kind of a
you don't consider
a tidy,
what we do public on this show.
Well, in other words, I didn't feel like employing the TBTL army to like take on the city with me. This is just a venting, and obviously this is entertainment. I mean, most people would identify this garbage talk as entertainment.
I'm
entertainment value.
Wildly entertained. 27 minutes into the show.
Oh my god! I started when I said we're at 12. I'll make this 5. So I'll leave it there. But anyway, that wasn't my goal with it. It was more of a kind of a way of saying, hey, look, this has got a timestamp. It's public. You can click on the tweet if you want to. Clearly, unless I am totally jokering it up here and taking photos of my garbage cans and then pulling them back from the curb just so I can harangue you every Monday evening, then clearly. We're doing our part. And as you can see in the photo, they're stacked up neatly, smallest to largest, so that the drivers will be able to see them all clearly from their truck. I'm doing everything I can, with the exception of buying special tape for the garbage can, because I feel like they gave us that garbage can. If it's not working for their drivers, they need to give us another garbage can or fix it themselves.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I was entertained. I don't know if the listeners were, but I certainly was.
Are you not entertained?
All right, so let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to tell you, Andrew, about something that arrived in the mail this morning that is totally unexpected, and it's adding to our legend as podcasters. So I want to get your feedback. I'm also going to send you a picture of what I'm talking about during the break, and then we can talk about it after the break. So stay with us. This is TBTL. Don't go anywhere. Never know. Like, I loved this song when it came out when I was a kid, but I just would have never predicted the whole kind of sort of second act of Amy Mann's career. You know, there's like tons and tons of bands that had hits in this era, like pop radio hits, and then like, but she's gone on to have such an interesting, cool career.
Yeah, I always get it confused too. She's got a longtime writing partner, right? Is that Michael Penn? But they're not a couple, right? They're just like what one of those. Music...
I think they're a couple.
Oh, they're an actual couple, a romantic couple.
I'm gonna. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know how often they enjoy sexual congress,
but could you just narrow it down, like just yeah. like weekly? Like, I'm just gonna take a ballpark.
I would say 3 times a week. Okay, I'm comfortable saying 3 times a week. I'm comfortable saying they have had coitus. In the amount of time that you haven't had your garbage picked up.
Within
the last 3 weeks, I think they've probably done it.
Do you think we should have them on the show to ask?
Not now. Let me see. Now I got to look this up to see if we've slandered them or not. Yeah. I think they're a couple.
Okay. But anyway, they also are. No, aren't they musical partners as well for a lot of stuff? Like it was. Aren't they kind of? Yeah.
Well, they're all kind of. They're kind of mobbed up in that Paul Thomas Anderson world of like doing a lot of music that ends up on his soundtracks. And Michael Penn played the sound engineer in Boogie Nights, I believe. When Dirk Diggler is, or I should say, what's his real name in the movie? But Eddie Adams.
Oh, I would have never. I thought if you said it, I'd remember it. His real name is Eddie Adams. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I only remember it because I think Burt Reynolds at some point says Eddie Adams from Torrance. But apparently he says it like Jack Nicholson in the movie, which is kind of cool, actually. I like that layered performance. But when they're recording the like Feel My Heat album, mm-hmm. I believe that the recording engineer is Michael Penn. So, and they play at Largo all the time. And, Amy Mann was also in The Big Lebowski. She played one of the nihilists.
Oh, yeah. So,
which is not a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, but still, it's just like they seem to run in a really creative, cool circle. You know who else is creative and cool? Our donors of the day. Oh, can we do this? Let's. I'm going to see if I can. This almost never works, but I want to find another. Let's see, Amy Mann level donors of the day. There's an Amy Mann record that I got in the 90s called I'm With Stupid. Mm-hmm. And let's see here. I'm going to try. Do you know anything about this album?
I remember her having an album called I'm With Stupid. I think it's one of her biggest ones. It had it had a refrigerator with the little kids letters.
Exactly.
On the front. Maybe I had like several songs off of it. Now I'm looking at it. I think I had some songs off of this in like my iTunes era. Oh,
I
God,
love
this song.
So
yeah, right. And this is used in Magnolia, right?
Oh, is it?
Maybe not. Maybe not.
I think she does a cover of One is the Loneliest Number.
Oh, definitely that. Yeah, she does a really long extended version that they do that amazing. I mean, that is one of my... I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I can't remember another like kind of opening intro montage that I was more obsessed with than that.
Oh, I love... I haven't heard this song in years. All right, well, this is what I'm going to be listening to for the rest of the day. And as I listen to it, I'm going to hold in my heart these listeners who are donors of the day, including John and Riley Calcagno. We saw John and his lovely wife on the cruise. It was so nice to see them. Riley is about to graduate college or is wrapping up college, which is incredible. They grew up so fast, Andrew.
Wasn't it John who, I'm hoping I'm not confusing people here, but wasn't it John who took basically our new headshot, our new TBTL official photo, which is you and I, standing at the front of the boat with
so
the Frankfurter sign behind us?
It's been, we're going public with that. Yeah,
I love it so much.
I know. The only problem is that you should be standing closer to the Frankfurter sign.
Right. Well, I actually, more... yeah, not to derail us. I love this photo that John took, and then somebody posted on social media, and I sent it to you over the weekend. You said that should really be our official photo. But the thing is, I actually have guilt feelings about that because you didn't get into podcasting so that your brand could be associated with hot dogs. That's some bullshit that
hey,
I brought
I'm
fine to
with
this.
That.
Are you fine with that? I always thought you were a little like, oh, we're done with the hot dog shit.
No, I'm good with it. I thought it's a nice picture. It's no Barp Brothers, which is one of the greatest pieces of fan art that's ever been created related to us.
I am so sorry that I can't remember who made the Barp Brothers sign, the parody of the Blues Brothers with Luke and I swapped in for the main characters. But get at me if you made that, because we'll obviously be using that for posters for our next tour.
So thanks to John and Riley. Thanks to Jennifer Finn of Arlington, Texas. Thanks to Robin Schmidt of Fall City, Washington. David Bratt of Albany, California. Huh. Jalapeno. Didn't see that coming. I was definitely expecting it to be New York, and it wasn't. Sarah Rebholz of
Utica,
Middleton.
California.
Your wife's new name is
Middleton, Wisconsin. And then Megan DeVries or DeVries of Wright here in Bellingham, Washington. What?
Megan.
I think I know Megan. I think Megan is formerly a goat farm person.
Oh, yes.
I'm thinking of the right Megan.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Now they live up here in Bellingham, which is cool. They were living down a bit south of here. So, Megan, thank you so much for donating to the show. Sarah, David, Robin, Jennifer, Riley, and John. Thank you all. Let's be honest. It's John's money. I mean, Riley, we appreciate it, but your dad's really your dad and mom are they're the heavy outfit. They're the money behind this whole operation, and that's how it should be because you're still a young man going forth in the world. But thanks to everybody who donated to the show and is still donating and keeping us going. We're a mere 995 episodes away from our 4,000th episode, and thank you so much for helping us get there.
Shut up.
Wow, that's pretty sweet hitting the post button.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right. Let me slide this in real quick. It's not officially on the Top Story list, but Andrew, I got something in the mail today. Well, I said this morning, but like they don't deliver the mail at 8 in the morning here in Bellingham. What really happened was, I don't know if she's still here. I don't want her to overhear it. But when I am out of town, the mail in our family, it does not get brought in from the mailbox. It's just not in.
That's my wife.
Not really in Carrie's wheelhouse, which is fine. I like getting the mail. It's exciting. You never know what thing could be in there. What various hair powder I've ordered from Amazon mm-hmm. might be in the. Which literally there was topic in the mailbox today. The mailbox was so full that it was. It's hard to explain, but basically. You couldn't shut. We have a locking mailbox. So it has this kind of tricky thing where you can put mail in the top of it, but you can't get to the mail if you were that's already in there so as to steal it. It was positively bursting. And one of the things that was bursting out of there, Andrew, was a package of kind of swag from the Thing Festival. And there were some stickers in there. There was a candle. It's very nice of them to do a little aftercare for us. They just mm-hmm. didn't have to do this. And then there's a Thing coloring book. And there on page 7, Andrew, is you and me, too beautiful to live, a drawing of you, a drawing of me. Guess who did the drawing?
Is it somebody who performed at the festival?
This person did not perform at the festival, but this person is a known entity in the TBTL universe.
Erdman?
Yes.
Derek.
Wow, what a good guess.
Yes.
Rapmaster Maurice.
No kidding.
Drew our picture in the TBTL coloring book.
No kidding.
I think I'll say this, and I don't know if Derek will hear this or not. I love Derek. He's been on the show many times. I'm an admirer. I don't know if the version of me he drew looks that much like me, but it looks handsome, so I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't say it's the most faithful depiction of me, but I would like to look like the version. I would like to look the way that Rapmaster Maurice, I think, thinks of me, because this is a more handsome version of me.
You look boyish, but also with stubble, I noticed.
Yes, yes.
I don't think of you as a stubble man.
No, I not capable, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there we are. And we're now in a coloring book.
Yeah, he's really captured my am I smelling a fart grimace. And again, that's not
you look wistful.
I'm not blaming him on that. I have the face that God gave me, but you know.
You don't like your drawing?
You know.
Now, is it that you don't like your drawing because you don't feel like it's accurate, or is it because you just don't like photos or drawings of yourself?
I think both. I don't want to put this on Derek because I don't think it's his fault, but it's not. You know, I mean, he definitely, you got a thick neck. He's going to give you a thick neck. Like, what are you going to do?
Really? Let's see. I'm going to go back to this. Again, I like I said, I think I got the better end of the deal just because I look like a vaguely handsome Danish guy.
Well, you definitely look because it's
been my dream.
It's a simple line drawing, so there's no coloring to your hair, which is, I mean, I would guess that you're a blondie in this.
Yeah.
But
I wonder where the origin picture of you came from.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just from being on stage, although I would have been wearing a hat on stage probably. I don't know. I mean, I want to be very clear here. Because I didn't say this. I mean, I get a little I get excited knowing that I was the well, I guess you would say I'm sort of Derek's muse. Right, you would say
yes.
That. Yeah, no, no. I mean, yes. When I think about the fact
I don't
that
know why
yeah.
you insisted on being nude for the podcast taping, but now it makes more sense.
Sketch me in a coloring book like one of your French girls. So I get excited when I think about the fact that you know he took the time to draw a picture of me. I don't, you know, we met once briefly at the Bumbershoot Festival. He was on stage, but I was very, very new to TBTL. I think I was very, very timid, and so I doubt that he even remembers meeting me. But he definitely, you know, he took at least this amount of time to consider the contours of my face, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And also we're on the same page as Parquet Courts.
Yeah. That's something.
And then Jeff Tweedy. So like they gave Derek the high profile Bedouin. They gave Derek the high profile acts, obviously. And the high profile acts were Parquet Courts, TBTL, Jeff Tweedy and Bedouin. Oh, one other quick thing that I heard. I'm going to say it was on the boat from a listener who had been out there in Port Townsend a little before, like the weekend before the Thing Festival. And they were in this restaurant called The In-Between, which is a cool place that's relatively new in Port Townsend. And somebody was asking the, I don't know if it was a server or bartender or somebody, oh, who's going to be at this Thing Festival? And apparently the server said, well, Jeff Tweedy will be there. And De La Soul will be there, and TBTL will be there.
Yeah, I heard
that
story
mentioned
too.
We're getting some good pub at the In-Between in Port Townsend, which
I would
highly recommend. And I would highly recommend it before that was I already liked it before I knew that they were spreading the gospel of TBTL.
Yeah, I believe I have a screenshot of an article I was reading months and months and months ago announcing the Thing Festival in Seattle in the Seattle Times. And they listed my name before Macaulay Culkin's. And so I was very excited about that. And then he didn't even show up anyway, which ended up working out great because he wasn't going to be on our podcast. But his replacement, TBD, a.k.a. Chris Gethard, was on our podcast. And he was amazing.
He was so great. That was ended up being a really fun show. I wonder if Macaulay Culkin pulled out because of the fact that you got top billing. Because, I mean, that is letting him know kind of his, you know, where he ranks.
If there are other theories, I'm open to them, but that's the one I'm going with.
That's
right
the leading
now.
One at this point,
sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The Glenlivet Scotch Whiskey
God.
Company has released a video, and then also, I don't think you can buy these things yet, but they put out a video advertising these. Where they're being referred to as Tide Pods. They're basically like, it's a scotch. They're calling it a cocktail, so it might be a scotch mixed with something else. But they're in these, you know, edible or like kind of plant-based little gelatinous pillows. Let me play you, Andrew, a little bit of this video that Glenlivet released.
The Glenlivet has released an original whiskey drinking experience. A collection of edible cocktail capsules made from seaweed, meaning no need for a glass, ice, or a cocktail stirrer. Thai Air, one of the world's best bars, created three new Founders Reserve-based recipes for whiskey lovers to try together.
Okay, so they are cocktails, like they had some fancy bar make up a whiskey-based cocktail, or three of them, and then they put them into these little like fruit gusher things. And you can just take it. You can pop that in your mouth and you get the whole experience. The Glenlivet Twitter page writes, no ice, no stirrer, no glass, no shoes, no shirt, no problem. Kenny Chesney is one of the spokespeople for this. We're redefining how whiskey can be enjoyed. Introducing the Glenlivet Capsule Collection. People are freaking out on the internet. Sounds like you're freaking out about this. You're not a fan?
Well, I'm just really confused. No, I'm not necessarily a fan. It doesn't sound like it appeals to me. There are a million products in this world that don't appeal to me, and that's fine. I am surprised that this is the brand that decided to create some sort of edible pod. It's very confusing to me that Glenlivet, of all things, like you think of them as being a tradition, you know, like all of the, I don't know, it's not the word I'm thinking of, but I'll just say sort of snobbery and tradition around whiskey drinkers, especially scotch drinkers. You just think that they'd be the last people who'd be like, and now we're putting booze in a pod so you can take it to your party. Like, it just seems like a weird brand matchup to me.
Yeah, it's I think what I would imagine happened, and by the way, congratulations to Glenlivet because they're getting a shitload of press out of this. So if that was part of the goal, which I'm sure it was, it's sort of working. But you're right. There's this one of two directions you can go if you're making whiskey, which is to be like, there's another one that's actually running during the football games that I find to be such utter BS. I think it's for Jim Beam. And they go like, when Prohibition ended.
Oh my God, I hate Jim
Beam,
so much.
Jim yes. Beam didn't have a single sip because he wanted to build a barn and age his own whiskey and then have a sip. I'm like, you don't bleeping know what this guy did or did not do in whatever that was, 1920 something. Like,
oh,
you have no idea.
So
and also,
much.
Side note, if the premise of the commercial, now we're just going to, just like Jadeveon Clowney doing a swim move around a offensive lineman, we're just going to sidestep the Glenlivet part of the conversation and move into the Jim Beam part of the conversation. But like, the premise of the Jim Beam thing is Jim Beam was but a humble man with he didn't have a lot to his name, but what he cared about was good. Is it bourbon technically?
Yeah,
that they make?
And it's actually that's my go to drink is usually
right. I know
Jim
that's
Beam.
that's your jam.
But can I just play this because I think I have the commercial right
yeah,
here?
Yeah, will
you? So I mean, it's just Genevieve and I. Can I just mention quickly here? Genevieve and I did a show on After These Messages, I want to say a year ago or more, called Origin Stories, where we looked at all these commercials that talk about their origin stories. It was around the time that Subway was reinventing itself after
Jared,
the whole Jared thing, and they had a really cool origin story about being a small little sandwich shop in probably Southern California. I don't recall, maybe the Bay Area. And we just kind of broke down and we tried to look at how well the origin stories matched reality. And I would love to like actually dig into this one. This is the one that's running now. We're seeing the inside of a bar. A bunch of people are celebrating. It's 1920s. Actually, when Prohibition ended in 1930. Is that correct? Whatever.
I don't know.
It's that time.
While America celebrated the fall of Prohibition, Jim Beam didn't raise a single glass.
Listen to that. Soundtrack. They're
not all heroes drink.
He wanted
chaos.
His first drink to be of his own birth.
They're doing a barn raising.
He didn't have much time. He didn't have much money, but he did have a
what?
Few.
He
good
had a
friends.
Fucking barn.
People who were raised
full of alcohol.
Over 120 days, they helped him rebuild the distillery. And while their names might not be on our bottle, it's because of them. We can raise this bourbon today.
This, like, goddamn hero worship for somebody who made, like, mid-level at best whiskey is just disgusting. Thank
it's
you for your
funny,
service.
The premise, like, yes. We'd like to start pre-boarding. If you had a bourbon mill in the 1930s that everyone helped you rebuild and you didn't have a drink at the official moment that Prohibition was over, you may now board the plane. Like, it's just so funny because there's just no way of knowing that. And also, I just find it like you don't think that Jim Beam had a slug of alcohol?
No.
While he was built, while he was contemplating the raising of the barn, the building of the whiskey, I don't know if it's a mill or a still, the 120 days that they were making this hooch. At no time did he have a drink because he wanted to wait until he could have his first sip of his own stuff. Also, he was not a humble, like if he had the whole operation, he was obviously doing fine. I don't know why the economics of it bothered me, the whole thing is just whatever. So what I was going to say is if you're in the alcohol biz in the scotch, and I'm very hazy on scotch versus bourbon versus, you know, whatever, but like, does Scotch whiskey have to be from Ireland or Scotland?
I don't think it has to be.
I just said that. It's called Scotch. You'd think if there was a connection, it's probably to Scotland.
I don't think it's like one of those things with wine. Like it can only be champagne if it's from a certain region, the Champagne region. But it is made differently. I mean, I think Scotch is made here in the United States, but it has to do with it's like peat and other things that go into it. Right? Is that right? Peat?
Well,
am I making that shit up?
No. That's the sort of like the sort of ground that they would use it, that they would soak it through, or something like that. Anyway. My point is, you got to go one of two directions. You've either got to go with like aged in oak barrels and like try to like lean into the like classiness of your thing, or you got to find some other lane. And clearly, the Glenlivet people were like, "Yeah, we're not winning that. We're not winning the hearts and minds when it comes to a Glenlivet being the most old school. So let's see if we can get some points for being the most new school." And again, it kind of worked. We're talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. So.
Yeah, but I thought that they were considered, like, of the mass-produced stuff, I thought that was considered, like, more of a top-shelf brand. But maybe not. I don't know much about Scotch. I mean, I know it's not, like, that you would go and, like, you would do some sort of special tasting for just the regular bottle of Glenlivet. But I didn't think that it was, like, I think of Jim Beam. I think of Jack Daniels. Like, Jack Daniels wants to come out with some sort of a... you know, honey flavor blasted woohoo whiskey. Yeah, sure. Like your clientele is a bunch of people who just kind of want to party before football games and after just devastating Browns losses, for example, you know, and Jim Beam, I would even think like there's more like, even though I hate that Jim Beam commercial, Jim Beam is not some sort of fancy whiskey. It is just like, you know, it's kind of a, I would say medium to lower shelf whiskey, but they have this goddamn commercial where it's kind of like, what a hero was Jim Beam. And Glenlivet, meanwhile, is kind of like, hey, eat one of our Tide Pods. Like, those brands are just backwards.
We've finally found some content Andrew can get into.
Yeah, right.
I love it. I don't know. I mean, I always have very sort of mixed feelings when something happens. I mean, I guess here's my question. Do you think that they're actually going to try to sell these, or is this just purely a PR stunt to purely get people like us talking about it?
It may be the latter. I thought of that. And again, just to be a broken record one more time, but that's what still surprises me about it, because it just doesn't seem like that is befitting this brand. Again, I'm not some fan. I don't think that the brand of Glenlivet has been besmirched and now I'm no longer going to buy their products. I don't really care, but just what they're going for. If they just decided, hey, we're going to do one of those things like Playboy when they said we're not going to have naked pictures anymore, or there are a million, or like Monopoly is getting rid of one of the pieces, which will it be? Or the latest Monopoly where it's going to be rigged so that boys get paid less or whatever. Like, so many of these gambits are just to get the media attention. But again, if that's what they're doing here, it doesn't seem befitting of their brand. Oh, but also, can I ask you, I know you don't drink anymore, but would this have appealed to you as a drinker? Let's say it wasn't Scotch, but a booze of your choice. You would want to pop one of these guys?
As a one-time thing.
Yeah, as a one-time thing, but not as – you would try it, but it doesn't really appeal – it wouldn't appeal to you as like integrating into your drinking lifestyle.
No, I don't see the value of it, because it doesn't seem more portable than like a flask of Scotch, because it's like – I could see there being a practical aspect where it's like it's easier to transport around somehow, but this actually seems more fragile. I could see you get to the big game and you open your bag and all of your Glenlivet gelatinous eggs have been shattered.
Popped. Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's way less stable than just bringing along a bottle of something. So to that end, like, I mean, I would do it just I would 100% do it just because it would be a fun experience.
Sure, I would try it. Yeah, yeah.
But it wouldn't. I can't see it being like. I don't really think that there's a large group of Glenlivet customers who are saying, "Yeah, I like this alcohol, but I wish I could have it explode in my mouth like all at one time and have to like gulp it down." I wish, you know what I mean. I don't think that the world was clamoring for this product.
Yeah.
But again, I got to give them full credit for getting massive amounts of what do you call that, earned media?
I call it earned media if I'm using it right. I want to say quickly before we move on, because we've probably exhausted this topic, but I always think of a conversation you and I had on TBTL. It's weird how like my brain will just there's so much I forget. Like I forget 98, as I learned in having conversations with listeners over the past week, I forget 98% of everything that is said on the show, including my own comments. But every now and then I'll remember a conversation we had. And when that happens, I'll often remember where I was, whether I was at my old apartment in LA doing the show with you or KCRW or whatever. But I remember sitting in a KCRW studio. You were in probably Port Townsend at the time we were doing the show. And the story was, you were still drinking at the time. And the story was, I believe, pills that could potentially replace alcohol, or they were like alcohol pills, or was it alcohol
powdered out? Powdered alcohol, maybe?
Powdered, yeah. And what, we would just add it to water then, so then it becomes a drink again? Or you didn't snort it, did you?
I mean, I did, but that was a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I do remember having a conversation with you because it seemed like it was something that was easier to like kind of ingest than carrying around a liquid. And you said, oh, I could totally see using it. And I was kind of like, to me, drinking, yes, you're, you know, in some cases you're doing it for the end result of being drunk or feeling buzzed or whatever, but it's also part of the experience of doing it. Like if somebody said, hey, it's the end of the day, we're going to flip this switch right now, and then you're going to feel drunk. Like, that doesn't sound appealing to me at all. Part of it is cracking open a beer and like drinking that beer or having that side shot of whiskey, not like, hey, take this powder or this pill or whatever, and you will feel drunk.
Right. They have that. It's called pills. And some people do.
Yeah, right.
And like, it's a different thing. Yeah. Like, there's none of the kind of like, there's none of the ritual around it. And, you know, I totally believe you, me, I get the appeal of all that sort of ritual stuff, because that is like a very, the smell of it, the feel of it, the taste of it, all that stuff is, that's the fun of it. You know, it's not just, again, if you want to just get there, there's a whole variety of uppers and downers, things you can take that will not have any of that kind of, you know, sitting at the frolic room, putting on Tom Waits music that nobody wants to hear.
You get me.
You need the ritual.
Yeah.
Speaking of rituals, I have a million rituals when I get to the hotel room now, where I will be coming up. Andrew, you and I, before the show, we were trying to get our calendars squared away. We're back home. We're doing the show like normal, which also means soon I'll be leaving for Hamilton, Missouri, and Chicago, and various places, and I'll be staying in hotel rooms, and I'll be doing my whole little setup in there. Well, this guy named Rick Clow sent out a tweet. It was an interesting tweet because he was referencing an idea that somebody else had posted on Twitter, but he couldn't remember who'd done it. He said, I don't remember who posted this on Twitter a few years ago, but whoever you are, you have improved every night I've spent in a hotel since. And then he attaches this picture of using those coat hangers that are, or a clothing hanger that have the clips on them to keep the curtains closed in the hotel room. I have noticed that in hotel rooms, it's very rare that all of the curtains close all the way and overlap and stay closed. There's always some cracks of light coming.
Really? Okay. I wanted to talk to you about that because I thought maybe you would have the same take on this that I did. Now, you've stayed in way more hotels than I have, but I also am no stranger to hotels.
Well, I'm a Bonvoy member. So.
Yeah. But this has never been an issue for me. Like, I've been seeing this article all over the place, and I've seen that tweet of the using the clips of the hanger to keep the shades drawn. Drawn? No, to keep the shades closed. And I was just kind of like, this is a solution in search of a problem. But I guess you're actually saying, no, you've had trouble sleeping because the shades won't close?
Well, we could swim move this whole topic and just move over to my sleeping curtains kind of relationship, which is, like, we don't have curtains in our bedroom here at Burbank Springs. And part of the thought is, well, one, nobody can really see into our room based on how our house is set up. Two, I like the natural light coming in and waking me up. It means I don't get to sleep in until, like, even on a Saturday, I don't get to sleep in very late because it's light at, you know, 7 in the morning or something. But I like that. It feels more natural to me. It feels like a less aggressive way to wake up. But I also actually sleep better when the shades are closed. Like, if I were to close all the shades in the hotel, or the curtains rather, close all the curtains in the hotel room and black it out, you know, like blackout curtain it, I would sleep better.
Yeah.
But I don't, because I'm afraid of sleeping better. I'm afraid that I won't hear the alarm. Or like, so it's funny because I actually am sort of intentionally not letting myself get as much good sleep, because there could be streetlights outside. There could be a fire truck that goes by and it's flashing. Like, there's a lot of, there's a lot more sort of, if this makes any sense, visual noise or visual intrusion, even at night when you have the curtains open. But I almost always sleep with the curtains open in any hotel room I'm in. That being said, the couple of times when I made the decision, maybe it was I was going to bed super late, like it was 4 a.m. and I had gotten a late check-in and I was like, I need this sleep bad, and I need to sleep until 11 or noon or something. The times when I have tried to close the curtains, they never close all the way.
Interesting. I think I use them more than you, but I am 100% down with what you said about it being a very dangerous game. Like, if we're traveling for work and I know I have a flight the next day, or you and I have to record in the morning, like if I'm going to bed and I'm closing those blackout curtains, I am making a very conscious decision that I need to make sure I've got a million alarms set and that I'm not going to, because it is so easy just to roll over in the morning when it's completely blackout. Even though it might be light outside, but you have to be very careful with them. I've never had that issue of the light seeping in, but I will, though, if you're saying this is a real thing, then I will concede the point.
You know, it happened two times on our cross-country trip. I just so happened to be in a room where clearly the person who had used the room last had to set a very early alarm for the flight.
Oh, really? Oh.
And then it went off for me.
That never happens to me anymore. That hasn't happened.
It doesn't
forever.
Happen to me very frequently. I wonder if housekeeping is trained.
I think it's cell phones. I think most people just use their phones now.
It doesn't happen to me all the time, but it happened in two different hotels where the alarm went off at some early hour of the morning because somebody had set it the previous night. I will sometimes try to set the room alarm as a backup. You know what I never do anymore is a wake-up call.
I used to do that all the time.
My jam, and then now I don't do the wake up call anymore. I do my phone, but then I also set a different alarm on my watch.
No, that's good.
So one of the two will hopefully get me up, because you know I can't. I'm at the age where if I don't have multiple alarms set and I have something important to do the next day, I can't fall asleep because I'm so anxious about if I'm going to oversleep. So this tweet goes out, it gets like hundreds of thousands, or at least a lot of retweets and attention. It made its way into my Twitter feed. And then other people started just kind of like throwing in their little life hack it buddies as far as hotel stays, which I thought was kind of interesting. If your hotel room, if the heating and air conditioning is so intense that the room, the air is very dry, and you wake up with that kind of dry back of your mouth, throat area kind of discomfort, somebody on Twitter suggested that you soak a towel with water, you wring it out tightly so that it's not dripping, it's just damp now, and you hang it over an ironing board in front of your room's vent or heater, which will add some, it's a humidifier of sorts to help put a little bit of water into the air. Here's one that's crazy. You can apparently, this is such a like cheat code on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, you can apparently override the hotel thermostat. This was a life hacker. This is actually a life hacker story. Here's what you do. Because a lot of the thermostats, we've talked about this on the show before, particularly in a big giant hotel, the thermostats, a lot of times you can't control them very much because they need to keep the system running. Let's keep things that are running. Like, you can't have everybody just freelancing. Some rooms going to 95 degrees, some rooms going to 35 degrees. It's also hard to change the temperature very rapidly in a big room. There's all this, or in a big building. There's just all this science that goes into the kind of overall temperature in a big hotel. And one of the things is giving you, the person in the room, a limited amount of control over your specific room. Well, apparently, if you hold down the thermostat's display button, then you press the off button simultaneously, and then you keep holding the display button down, but you let go of the off button and you press the up arrow. Then when you release all of the buttons, you have now hacked into the temperature controls and you have like wrested control of your room's HVAC away from whatever master system they're using.
So to go over that again, it's up, up, down, down, left, down, right, down, left, right, A, B, back, A, B, start.
Yep, that's exactly
it. No, that is amazing. I want to try that. I'm usually, when I'm in a hotel room, I don't know if you notice this or if it's too cold. Well, actually, there's another part of this too, but usually I keep the room as cold as it will possibly go when I'm staying by myself. Part of that is if I know you're coming over to record a TBTL in that room and I've just taken a shower, and usually hotels, you can't open up the windows to let things air out. I don't want you coming into some sort of a steamy mess. So I just like to try to keep it cold and like try to clear everything out of there. And I don't know, I think I like staying in hotels, but I think like coming into somebody else's hotel room where they've just been sleeping, especially if it's a small place like we were staying in New York, can be kind of like, oh, I'm here to do work and I'm sitting next to your where you were just sleeping a couple of hours ago. So I try to like kind of make things professional, and part of making things professional is keeping things cold. But I think I just like it that way. I've never needed it colder than it will go, though. Usually it bottoms out at 60, and that's fine for me. But I kind of want to try this just because I like trying things.
Right. I know. I will feel like I got into Minus World on Mario Brothers or something if this works.
Yeah.
Hold down the display button, and then while you're holding it down, press the off button, and then you release the off button, and you're still you've been holding the display button the whole time. So press the off button, let it go. Then press the up arrow, and then you let everything go. And apparently,
I'm
you're then going to have the temperature control, which is kind of cool. Another idea, and this one is really relevant to my interest, Andrew. The remote control is notoriously a very dirty part of the hotel room experience. Some people stir their drinks with it. Some people would consider that rock bottom. Some other people didn't. But
some people kept
what
going.
You can do. Some people had gotten into a real cocktail stirring habit with the remote control, and they wanted to push it as far as they could. You know, a lot of times the ice bucket will have a little plastic bag in it, and if you're not going to use that, you can put that plastic bag around the remote control and then change the channels and not touch the scummy remote control. That's kind of genius.
I actually use the you saw me using the ice bucket when we were in New York, right? Because the night before I was coming home and I bought myself a 6-pack of beers, and I drank one, I think, that night, and then I had 5 more beers left over. And so before I went out to meet up with the listeners after the New York show, I was like, oh, I'll put some of these extra beers on ice in case I want them after you know, hanging out tonight. I can have a cold one, as they say in Patriot, in my room, which, by the way, I did not end up doing anyway. But I like the idea of having an ice bucket full of beers. So I will often do that. So unfortunately, I don't usually have extra ice bucket bags because I do like – of course – if I'm just using the ice bucket to keep the outside of a beer cool, I don't really need the bag for that, do I?
Correct. Yeah, that was the thing I was going to say. Like, if you're going to use that ice, if you're going to eat it, if you're going to put it in a drink, then yeah, you definitely want to utilize that plastic bag. But if you don't, if it's just going to be a cooling thing, you can get away with that. But I thought that was kind of smart. Another thing is, and this one seems like it's avoidable for a few reasons, but more and more hotel rooms, this is a very European thing, is that you have to put your room card into a slot when you come into the room that allows all of the lights and stuff to be turned on. And I guess the idea is that they don't want people running everything and having the lights on when they're not in the room. So a good way to ensure that that happens is that you have to use your room card to do that. But as they write in this by the way, this our Washington Post article is where this is all laid out. I don't have the person's name in front of me, but because of the vagaries of printing the story out. But in an effort to conserve electricity, hotels require guests to put their key card in a slot near the front door. But if you leave, you're going to need your key, therefore preventing you from wasting energy while you're out. But if you need power for something, even if you're not in the room, so in other words, if you're trying to charge something and you got to leave, but you got to take your key card with you, but then the power in the room won't work, you can put any card in that slot. It's not reading your room card. It's just reading the presence of a card. So you could slip your – if you're an old man like me and you have a AAA card in your wallet, you could do that. You could slip, you know, parking receipt if it's one of those kind of rigid paper receipts. Anything that is approximately the size and width of a hotel room key – card. You could just slip that in there and it will still work. So that's also a life hack.
I didn't know that we had those in Alice Springs, Australia. That was, mm-hmm. I think, maybe the only time I've run into that. But I didn't realize that if that thing was pulled out, that it killed all of the power in the room. I thought it just didn't let you like leave lights on. But yeah, if you're charging something, that could be an issue.
Yeah, I've never tested the theory. I'm going to choose to trust the people putting together this article. But yeah, I guess
Natalie Compton, by the way. Sorry, I meant to interject.
Oh, before. Thank you.
Natalie Compton.
Good job. Nice job, Natalie Compton, for pulling that together. So those are some little hacks that you can do next time you're staying in a hotel room to make your stay a little bit more comfortable.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon. Can I mention one other thing that I just want to get off my chest? I vociferously retold a story that somebody sent us via email to the Spotless podcast about how they don't wash airplane blankets. They put them in the bags without actually washing them first. You pointed out, yeah, but often those bags are sealed shut, and I find it hard to believe they're not washed. If you're going to go through the process of sealing a bag, they must be washed, and maybe it's just some airlines that don't seal them. You showed me that on the flight, I think, to Florida or something. You took a photo of your
flight from New York to Seattle.
Oh, okay.
It was so early that they actually had the blankets out, and I took a picture of one because
and it was sealed.
It was,
right?
It was as I remembered it. Yeah.
So I want to set the record straight on that. And also, this person said in their email something like, "Oh, and my friend, I think they said my friend found like a turd in her blanket." And a lot of people have written back and said that is a Nicole Byer story, the comedian. I don't know if she said it, and I think she said it on a late night show. She tweeted out photos of it. So I wonder if it's one of those things where, you know, people refer to us as their friends, like, "Hey, the friends I listen to on the podcast." I wonder if somebody heard Byer's story and then somehow in the game of telephone that got transferred into, "Oh, my friend found a turd in her blanket." But I'm starting to really rethink this email that I received from a listener who may be hearing this conversation right now. I will make just because so many people are like, "That story you told is exactly like a story a famous comedian told on a late night show, so you should look into that." I just wanted to set the records as straight as possible right now.
All right. Well, did that constitute our email segment?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, my gosh. Look at the time. I didn't realize
what
time it was.
Yes, I have to run.
Oh, I was just getting started.
but the good news for everybody is we're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. So you won't have to wait long. That's going to do it for today's show. Fun to be back in our home stomps. And hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for being part of TBTL. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. Experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
Power out.